Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Talking the Cure, Hogan Lovett's Life Sciences and Healthcare Podcast. In this two-part series, Arne Thielmann is leading the conversation with Richard Backhaus and Lars Cornells, discussing the integration and implication of digital health, artificial intelligence, and legal considerations in the medical device industry. They explore how traditional companies like Dräger adapt to digital innovation, the role of AI and software in life sciences, and the challenges and opportunities presented by regulatory environments. They delve into specific legal frameworks such as European Union's data strategy and the AI Act, discussing their impact on innovation and data access. The conversation also touches on practical use of AI in legal work, the future of the profession, and the broader implication of AI on society and human behavior. So Arne, pick it up from here, please.
Yeah, great. Just to introduce ourselves here, very happy to have two very knowledgeable guests today, Richard Backhaus, Lars Cornells. My name is Arne Thielmann. I'm a partner with Hogan Lovells in the life sciences sector, helping clients on their daily operations, which at the moment involves a lot of digital health work. And very interested to hear what your current view on certain legal discussions on artificial intelligence, data, digital health is, but especially also very much interested in how you use and integrate these technologies in your work already, be it the legal work, but also obviously the work as Dräger, as a medical device company. And to hear a little bit also, the do's and don'ts, maybe what you would recommend in terms of artificial intelligence, ChatGPT and the like. Yeah, and I'll be over to you for a brief introduction.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Arne. Welcome to Dräger, to the Dräger headquarters. Quite a lot of history around here, sitting in a 100 years old building. So we've been around for quite a while. Now, I'm Richard. I'm heading the legal function at Dräger. I've been with the company for more than 15 years and, trying to adapt to everything that's happening, right?
I'm Lars. I'm with Richard and his team. I'm a specialist in IT law. I've been with Dräger for more than 8 years now, so not that long for Dräger, for the Dräger timeline. Yeah, thanks for having us.
And you already mentioned that that's a perfect combination. We have tradition, 130 years, and at the same time, being on cutting edge of technology and innovation. So I'm really looking forward to our discussion here. And maybe just to start with, as such a traditional company, how does digital innovation, digitalization fit into Dräger's world, into Dräger's mindset?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. You are around for more than a century only if you adapt. Although we think we are built to last as Dräger, you last only if you adapt to constant change and what's actually needed to solve the problems of the world, or at least in your business areas you're in. And to be honest, Dräger has been a mechanical company for quite a long time, then became an electromechanical company, and then became an electromechanical plus digital company quite a while ago. And the funny thing, and Lars, please add to that in a second, but the funny thing is we've been into digitized products, meaning we have a product which performs a real-life task like ventilating a patient or something like that, but embodies a computer. We've been into that for roughly two decades or more. But somehow, only in the 2020s, everyone recognized. So digitization has been around for a while.
Yeah, it's been for ages. So we do have software products, standalone software products, for quite a while now. I think in the medical field, there would be, for example, the Integrated Care Manager, which is a software that is on the market for 15 plus years now. And it's a standalone software product. But regardless of us having software as a firmware in our devices for ages now, I think that the mindset that we are a company that is strongly reliant on digital products or software, this is something that is beginning to gain traction, but is not something that everybody has on its mind, on his or her mind when thinking about our products. So that's kind of funny, because we are actually quite innovative and quite digital for a really, really long time now. And when you ask us how important is as digitization or artificial intelligence and things like that for our business, looking at the hospital strategy, for example, and at the vision of Mr. Dräger, well, hospital automation is the forefront of our strategy. So yes, it's quite important for us. And the same is true for the safety division as well.
That's a very interesting aspect that we also actually recognize and realize in the same way than doing life sciences and being in this industry for quite a while. We also often think like, yeah, this is something we're doing for the last 10 years, helping clients with their digital projects, but it has become much more attention in the public. The mindset, I think, is already there in many places in terms of the, you mentioned, maybe not everyone knows. Do you think it's a matter of communication? Does Dräger communicate, so to say, enough about it? Do you think you're well set in terms of talking about your innovation?
I don't think it's a problem that the market is not thinking that we are innovative. I think the problem is more or less nobody really cares or hasn't cared that much. For example, if you use an anesthesia device, obviously there's software running on it. But speaking from a legal perspective or a legal department, that you need software license terms, for example, that's something that nobody has ever thought about because the device is working. So nobody really cares. And the world is getting more complex, so it becomes more important to think about those questions. I think that's the reason why it's becoming a hotter topic for us.
Yeah, I think, and that's not peculiar to us or the industries we are in. I think on a broader scale, you see two developments. You have like the traditional software IT businesses, like the GAFAs and all the others that come from a IT background. And you have like classical industry players that move more into the IT landscape. And a perfect example, and that's not a business we are in predominantly, is this car stuff. If you look at automated driving and all the navigation technologies and stuff, you see the traditional car manufacturers and Apple and Google moving into the same direction of automated driving, but they come from a different starting point. One is hardware focused and one is software and data focused. And that's kind of an interesting game to play because they start from different perspectives, but want to come to the target first, to the finish line first. And that's a bit what may explain why this has come more into focus with Dräger, because traditionally we are like classical industry, we are a product company. It's a device you can touch, you can move. The industry hasn't, or the sales mechanisms, the traditional sales mechanisms have been already there when the products were entirely mechanic. If you simply buy something, you buy a box. And now people are thinking more about, and that's also true for other industries, for like solution providing broader things. Interconnectivity is a major thing that came into play, and all the fantasies regarding data. And that kind of changes the perceptions. Plus, yeah, we have the data players. I mean, look at Oracle and Cerner. Oracle is a classic IT company. Cerner is a market leader in hospital information systems. But there's an IT classical IT company moving into that, or Microsoft acquiring Nuance as a voice recognition software, predominantly used by medical practitioners. So you see what is happening with automated driving, kind of in the healthcare industry as well. And this probably opened the eyes for everyone.
You mentioned very good points, and I think there are a couple of not loose ends, but ends you mentioned. And maybe to start with the connectivity and the communication between devices and the data fantasies you mentioned, shifting a little bit to the legal landscape and what the European Union has in mind when it talks about its data strategy. The idea underlying the Data Act and the European health data spaces is obviously to create data access, to create something like a single European market for data as it existed for many years now for physical products, and to create something which is helping businesses to exchange data and to thrive and to develop new business models. So a shift in perspective from maybe data protection more to data governance, data access. How do you see this development as a company that produces connected devices already? Is this data access something you're looking forward to? Is it something you might be afraid of, to put it maybe a little bit too harsh? I mean, you're not afraid of anything, but yeah, what's your view on this data access that the EU is playing so strongly on at the moment?
Basically, probably that's the right moment for general caveat, right? So this is all our opinions, and there may be people in the company that disagree, and rightly so, because if you have diverse opinions, you come up with better results in the end. So probably there's some data experts and regulatory experts that say, oh, what are these guys saying here? But so please take it as a personal view. Lars, do you want to start?
I think it's a really good question. And you could look at it from two perspectives, I think. Mainly, I think it's great. And I think it's quite needed for the healthcare market and the landscape as a whole, and especially for Germany. Because as a German company, we do face the challenge that we are not a GAFA. And in Germany, there is not such a big player that would, for example, be the next German champion all on its own. So having a data space that can be used by everybody and where you will find data from various sources creates great opportunities, especially for companies that are not as big as the aforementioned. So I think that's great. The problem with that is, at the same time, the regulatory environment and the processes that you need to put in place that this all is going to work well, and the discussions that will happen with the authorities, is something that's a huge challenge for companies that are not as big as Facebook. And even for Facebook, it's quite a challenge to talk to, for example, the data protection offices of Germany and stuff like that. So I think it provides challenges and opportunities alike. I would like to focus on the opportunities, obviously.
Yeah, interesting take. Yeah, we should have brought Peter into the conversation. Peter from the team, kudos to him. He's the great expert in data access and legal data strategy. But as we've discussed with him over and over again, basically I would like to jump back to this automated driving race. And you may take that as a picture for what might be happening here as well. Because the question with sharing data or general data access might be, who's the better user of the data pool? Is it the IT company, or is it going to be the product company, the classical manufacturer? So you might end up into this race as well. And that's probably one of the reasons why industry has been reluctant to share data in larger pools in the past, because at the moment, at least for the niche you are in, you have the better data access than the IT corporations. And if you pool it in a general pool with general accessibilities on friend terms, you might be in a disadvantageous situation. On the other hand, it offers you marvelous chances to have greater data pools, more data, and probably ease of access. And there are a lot of questions to that. Playing around with data, and we are not obviously lawyers and not data scientists and data experts, but what has been challenging in the past and might be challenging for all this data pooling is, how is the structure of the data and the quality of the data? Where does it come from? Is it from a representative group of people, societies? Is it biased just by the selection of where the data comes from? We don't know. And that's going to come when we probably touch upon AI regulation later, will be one of the major challenges. What can you reasonably do with the data you get from a kind of unknown source in the end? The great chance of all these data space initiatives by the European Commission is, do they solve the question of ease of access, data privacy, additional protection? Is it easier to access through such general pool than it might really help? on the other hand, you have the quality of the data challenge. And basically, I think the Data Act is one of the smartest industry politics ideas the European Commission had for quite a while. Whether it's going to be easy to put it into work and make it work in practice is another question. But basically, to be the front runner in saying, well, probably there is this new oil called data, which may shape future business globally, and to shape the market regarding data and have it generally be accessible in order to facilitate innovation is something I think Europe should try.
Yeah, and it's going to be quite interesting, because if you have an open data pool and everybody is able to look at that, it might also very much foster innovation, because working with data is not something that only big companies are good at, especially small companies are good with that. And combining that with the regulation around base models for AI, it's going to be very, very interesting who will be the one who is best with using that data. I think in the medical field, there's the additional challenge that you have the regulation in place. And most small companies will have huge problems with the regulation that is coming with working in the medical field. And this might be the main reason, I think, why the innovation could be not as fast as it might be otherwise, because of the burden that you have when you want to become a medical device manufacturer or someone else working in the medical field. And then the problem is not that your solution is not that great, but that you don't have the quality and regulatory guys in your company that you need for the authorities.
Very interesting aspect. I don't know whether it's right, but it just pops up into my mind. Basically, most product regulation so far has been vertical. So it focused on applications or specific industries. And basically, if you talk to regulatory lawyers, product law lawyers, technical lawyers, they will in essence tell you that each and every product, even the glass on the table, will be regulated of some kind or the other. But what we are now seeing, and that might shape the software industry in a certain way, is that you may look, and we still have to wait for the final wording, we may look at the AI Act as a horizontal software regulation. So it's not something where AI in the classical sense, so there's this magic black box creating something is regulated, but software application in general. And this is something which may put, and we have to wait for the wording and the details and stuff, because the quick question for those who are not that familiar with that is, what is actually AI in the sense of the AI Act? And we discussed that quite a lot, and I had a short gloss in the Handelsblatt a couple of months ago, where we asked the question, well, can you really draw a solid line between classic deterministic algorithm-based software where you put in A and add certain things and there's a result, and AI? And maybe, depending on the final regulation, at least back in the days, we didn't really see that solid line. It might even be just a slightly dotted one, right?
At best.
And yeah. At best. So basically, what we may see is a general software regulation coming up through the back door. And that will be an interesting thing for the entire software and also startup scene in Germany and in Europe. I don't know whether anyone in Brussels has thought about that, but
probably they didn't.
Yeah, you mentioned a very good point in terms of what is the definition, and lawyers love definitions of AI in the sense of the AI Act. Maybe before we come to the downsides of the regulation, you mentioned a good point in that the general idea of the Data Act is a fascinating and a good one, and is really also unseen anywhere in the world. And Europeans and Germans tend to regulate a lot of things, and Germans especially tend to see the negative aspects. But to start with, it's a great idea to create something like a single market, to create, so to say, the highways on which the trucks full of oil, of data can flow. So that's generally a good idea. But it's a very general and broad idea that needs to be implemented and needs a lot of detailed regulation when it comes to implementation. When you, for instance, look at how long it still takes to get the electronic patient record in Germany, this is a discussion for decades now.
Yeah.
So the idea is great. The implementation is then a very specific topic. And I touched on another point. So maybe we talk a little bit about that for a moment. And then I would really like to talk about the AI and the definition of AI and what it means for software companies in general.
With regards to the European data regulation, we focus very much on the industry perspective at the moment. But what convinces me that it is a good thing, or the basic idea of the Data Act is a good one, is the customer perspective, whether it's individuals or business customers. Because in essence, and that's not a legal term, but in essence, it creates a right to portability by design. And that avoids vendor lock-in. And you can change your photos to give a very private person example from Google to another platform with all the metadata, which is, I think, a brilliant idea. Or you could use any other platform you use and port it to another platform. So it may create additional competition and lets you govern your data, not just private data. And that's, in essence, a fascinating idea.
In essence, yeah. Before the details come into...
Yeah, although I'm not so sure that we need those many details. I think as a lawyer, we like details and we like to work with details and always look at things and say, well, oh, we need to think about it and there need to be processes and everything needs to be regulated. At least that's the normal perspective of a lawyer. I'm not so sure if that's so great or if we could just simply set some goals that we need and then let the market or the companies decide on how to best achieve them. And the one who's going to be successful with that, yeah, well, good for you. And the one who won't be successful, well, then you're gone. And this might be the faster way and also the more convenient way for the market as a whole.
Yeah, but you're touching upon a general regulatory problem. We are far away from output-focused regulation. So the neminem lederin, don't hurt anyone else. As a classic legal principle, and you may put more details to that, but that's all gone. We regulate both. We regulate the outcome and the entire process or how to come up with that. And I think that adds to the general regulatory burden that it's not sufficient anymore to avoid the outcome or the negative result on something you want to protect. But there is a whole mandatory process, at least, that you need to follow in addition to avoiding the outcome.
That's a very good point. In the sense that there are actually already too many details foreseen and too much documentation of the details that in the worst case do not help business, but rather have people that think, shall I do it or not? No, I'm not willing to invest what I do need here in order to comply with the regulations, and then in the worst case not do a business because the regulatory burden is too high.
Yeah, and it hinders innovation even with regards to the goals that we would like to have regulated, because if you prescribe certain processes and certain documentations, then nobody's going to think outside the box how the goal might be achieved even faster,
absolutely.
Even better, and maybe using some processes that were from a totally different industry, which might be interesting and quite helpful for every industry probably to think outside the box and look to somewhere else. And this is something that's not going to be done if you put into the regulation, well, you have to do X, Y, Z. So I don't think that that's a good move.
Yeah, and coming to the aspect that you mentioned in terms of does the AI Act essentially in the end regulate software and not only intelligent software, I will put it. I mean, I hope that the most of the software that is used makes some sense. But yeah, is the threshold too low that you would see at the moment for regulation?
I think it depends on what you want to achieve. That's the first thing. Because it might also be the goal that you want to achieve, that you want to have a broad software regulation and just call it AI Act. Maybe that's the goal. And then obviously the definition would be fine. But
it would have been more honest to say it,
yeah.
Right?
Would have been more honest, yeah.
Yeah, the question, there's just a preliminary answer to that, I think. AI has been around for quite a while, but AI has been on the minds of everyone for like the last 16 months with the large language models coming up and the general accessibility of something that you that may fall under the label of AI. I think there is general international consent that there needs to be some kind of regulation on that. I think even the front runners of artificial intelligence see potential risks and downsides. I don't think it's going to kill the world, but humans will probably do it by other means. But this new technology or what generally possible with AI now is a bit scary. And that I do understand. And I do understand that people want to put some boundaries to that. I don't think that it will that much make a difference for us, because if you look at our products, I mean, our purpose is technology for life. We manufacture, and sorry for those in the company that are sitting on product that I don't mention now, but we manufacture medical devices in protective equipment, and it's highly regulated. Everything is highly regulated, and I don't think that the regulation of AI will add that much to, even if it's a general software regulation, to what we do at the moment. So there might be details, there might be other things we will have to document and oversee, but it's going to be, my gut feeling at least at the moment, it's going to be minor adaptations rather than fundamental changes.
Yeah, I think for us, it's not going to be such a big problem. Because we are so highly regulated right now and are quite accustomed to be in the situation where we need to document everything in detail, and we have the people on board for such a thing, we have the processes in place. So I think for us, because we are very good at that, this is not going to be the main problem. I think the main problem might be that the official counterpart or the authorities might not be able to handle all the documentation that they are going to get from companies who are good with that. And I think that's something that the AI regulation does not solve. Because, well, if you are, let's say, Germany, and you want to have an authority that is overlooking everything AI that the industry does, yeah, that's great. What people do you need for that? You need the data analyst, you need AI specialist, you need somebody who knows what they are talking about. Well, that's the same people that, for example, Airbus, Dräger, Siemens, everybody else also needs. And given what money the state is going to pay those people, well, I don't think that they are going to work for the state. Probably not. And then there is the counterpart missing for the whole industry, for everything that the EU wants the industry to provide. And that's a big problem. And if you need to wait 4, 5, 6 years before somebody is going to approve your product, well, that's innovation that is not going to happen.
Yeah, that may explain, very good point, Lars, that may explain why the regulation is like it is, because in the end, they are putting the oversight task on the industry by regulating the how-to-do process, because essentially that can hardly be an effective public oversight. They can't.
That's it for today. Don't worry, we are going to return with the second part of this conversation in about 2 weeks. If you already have further questions for Arne, Richard or Lars, you can find their contacts in the show notes. In addition, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you're not going to miss the second part. Give us a 5-star rating and follow us on LinkedIn, as we are sharing a lot of interesting content there. So let's close this out. Thank you for joining. Hear you in about 2 weeks when we're talking The Cure.